Do we have any contributions or questions from the floor? You're all being stunned by our erudite presentations.
I have a confession to make. I would find it heartening if the popular, if the result of the referendum is run for Remain, purely and simply because it's not such a people are rejecting the appeal to crude, the appeal to crude nationalism, and are a little bit more worldly wise, if that's the right way to put it, but they're not so alienated. But if if I said if the vote was to leave, it would be a vote of alienation and mistaken identity. That's a site that our system runs on mistaken identity. I'm going to vote world socialism on the ballot paper. But I think I'd be heartened if we reject this crude nationalism.
What you could do is put an X against Remain and then write World Socialism across the ballot paper.
That's just mean to the poor.
Do you understand what I'm trying to say here? Yeah.
Well, I think that even the appeal to crude nationalism is very confused. Adam mentioned Tim Martin and the Weatherspoon stuff. Now, I don't know if it was that particular issue of the erudite learned journal of Weatherspoon studies, but I was reading one in a previous book where he had his editorial. He said, well, yes, we need to vote for leave, but of course we still need the free movement of workers, because obviously he needs cheap bar staff. Yeah. So he's in favour of all the other stuff, but not that bit. So I think even they're very confused about not just where their practical interests lie, but where the point of principle is. I mean, I've seen at least one article where someone said, it's entirely absent everywhere else, someone said, £4,300 to regain national sovereignty, it's a deal. Now, of course, for a conviction patriot, that's the deal. £4,300, yes, that's it. Pecuniary interest, no object. But the fact that both sides are having a fight on actual day-to-day bread and butter issues, I think shows much more where it's at, what that they're trying to win over to people who for whom this the traction of nationalism isn't as strong.
Yeah, here today, took a long time because of the amount of traffic, but we did notice that a few taxis with the thing in the back, for independent for Britain, vote leave the EU. you just wonder what they really think they're going to get out of it, and how disappointed that a lot of these people are going to be one way or another.
Well, I think you're right. I mean, certainly the small businesses are classically the ones who are the patriotic ones because they get to drum business up that way. Mm. I think also taxi drivers, the only thing that's going to curtail Uber is something on a European scale or a big national scale. It's almost certain that any sort of British government would probably accede to companies like that, and they'd find themselves deregulated. They've had to fight quite hard. Just on the question, I made a passing aside about Scotland, but the very fact of having the vote proves you're independent. I mean, that's it. Only an independent country can vote for independence, and only an independent country can vote to stay in and out. So, the question's already decided. The UK is a sovereign state. I think the only question after that is, what does it do with its sovereignty?
No, I think that in the event of a Leave vote, the people are going to be disappointed. Because they're certainly not going to get all these improvements on the National Health Service, but they probably won't get other improvements, their point of view. Because if they're right and there's a boom, then they're going to have workers, aren't they? Where are they going to get them from? And if they're wrong, and there's a slump, and there's a trade war between Britain and the EU, which would be the case if they do withdraw from the single market, all the international finances are going to move to Frankfurt, and house prices will go down in London, but I'd imagine the number of taxi rides will go down in London as well. So, I mean, it's interesting to see what happens if there is a vote to leave, because, Johnson and the Tories there will probably do some deal like Norway's got, and they still pay money to the EU to have access to the market. But, you know, Farage and his people will then be up in arms, won't they? So I just think they'd be complete mugs, people to vote for leave, you know what I mean?
Earlier on, Paul opened up by saying, giving three definitions of a referendum, the last one being that this particular referendum is an exercise, it's a consultation that's not legally binding on the... So why then are all these people, all the experts for the Cruddas et al., who want to leave, if it's only in a consultation, why are they taking it so seriously, putting up all this money? Because if there is a return to leave, which I hope there isn't, I think that I'm like Dan here, I think it's better that we're in, from the point of view of workers, rather than like what happened in the 1930s, where you had economic nationalism, and they withdrew because of the worst the world's slump, and then put up tariffs, which compounded the effects for the workers in various countries around the world. So the question then is, why are they taking it so seriously if it's only a consultation?
I mean, it is, you say, only a consultation, it's unlikely that any government's going to ignore it. It's true that the majority of MPs who are in favour of Remain, but I mean, if they vote to leave, then I can't see them, defying a referendum. What they will try and do is water it down. I mean, leave, the question is, should the United Kingdom remain a member of the European Union or leave the European Union? I mean, leave. Yeah. Can cover all sorts of things. They can formally leave it and stay a member of the European Economic Area. So they'd opt out then of all the political things. I mean, that could be an interpretation, or you could interpret it in the way some other people want to. It's a complete break with the EU and you try to go it alone.
So it means various things then. It could mean various things.
Well, that's what Bill was trying to explain. They can do, as long as they formally withdraw from the European institutions.
They can withdraw on certain issues connected with Europe, but not opt out totally. They could do that.
Well, no, I mean, Norway is not a member of the EU, but it's a member of the single market. It's a member of the free movement of labour. I mean, that is a solution which, you know, the Tory party or the majority of MPs might want to adopt. But I think it would be very hard. I don't think it would happen if there's a leave vote that they would refuse to leave. I mean, they could have got some leeway. They can decide to postpone when they actually give them, the notice to leave. Don't have to give it straight away. But Britain will be a member anyway for the next 2 years. So if they start breaking rules, like state aid to the steel industry or something, they'll get fined by by the Court of Justice, or if they stop. Trying to stop Romanians coming in, they'll be taken to the Court of Justice, and there'll be a trade war on, won't there? That's what will happen. Well, like you said, in the 1930s.
Yeah.
The only option they'd have, there's, I mean, Cameron's words were straight away he would exercise Article 50. Now you can read a lot of what does straight away mean to a politician?
Yeah.
You might have to go down to the pub first, walk the dog, have a bath, and then sign Article 50. So they've got that wiggle room. Of course, they've got the option of ditching Cameron, and then they can say, whoever's the new Prime Minister, I didn't enact this referendum, ignore it entirely, and they can provoke a constitutional crisis if they really want one. But, I don't know where that would go. That would be quite disastrous for them. It is the devil's in the detail. Whatever outcome, Britain will have to negotiate some deal with the European Union. And they'll have to negotiate with it as a bloc. They can't have separate deals with the French, the Germans, and the Spanish. So there'll have to be a trade deal with Europe. What the terms of that could be, it could be almost identical to what we have now. It could be that they create a new entity, which is Britain and the European Union. And the United Kingdom is one entity, and it negotiates directly with the European Union. They have a meeting once a year. All these things are possible. because they've still got the free hand to go off and negotiate, and it's an executive function. It's it's something that the crown does through the government to negotiate treaties. It's not something that happens in Parliament or in votes in the elections. They can, and the devil will always be in the detail, because you know I had a look at the Canadian trade deal, or at least I read the Janet and John version, because you know no one in their right mind reads the actual text, the technical details. But you know, because that's what professionals are for.
Yeah.
You know, it's the same as reading European directives. I looked at one at work the other month, and my eyesight recovered eventually. But you know, the bottom line is that there isn't an instruction to leave the EU and become joint. We could affiliate with the United States of America, become the 51st state. Mm-hmm. I mean, all these things are available to them if they choose to exercise these options. So, did I say the near hand there just now?
Well, I didn't know whether to ask this. All these, a lot of the what are called 52 variety Trotskyist groups, a large number of them want to advise their workers, you know, to leave. I wonder whether you'd like to make comments on these various. They are confusionists, you know, that they're trying to.
I think they are anticipating an economic and political crisis.
Oh, yes.
And that's what they want. I mean, they want to bring down the Conservative government.
They don't believe in the parliamentary.
Well, we met some yesterday in Kingston, and they said, "Oh yeah, Boris and Farage, they're wankers, but we're still going to vote for them." You know, I was going to mention, but this really is the tail end of these people. I don't know what they think they're doing, associated with all these, you know, financiers and xenophobes and things. But I think it must be that what's it say here? If Britain votes to leave, it won't automatically mean a move to the right. The Tories are being torn apart by debate over the EU. If Cameron loses, he will almost certainly go. If a Conservative government survives, it will be hopelessly fragile. Not only will the government be weakened, the rich and powerful overwhelming support for its membership. Basically, a crisis for our rulers could open up a greater space for the left. So that's what they're anticipating. That's why they voted for Scotland independence as well. They want chaos and things, which they hope to be able to take advantage of.
I think that there is also some legacy policies. Obviously, back in the Cold War days, they were for us joining the Warsaw Pact, or whatever, you know, blocking with against the capitalist club of the European Union. And so there was a lot of the left for whom that's still the default position. You know, 40 years ago they were against the EU. They're still against the EU now, because that's you know, why change the policy? And there is still a good argument that it's a capitalist club. I was reading the other day E.P. Thompson writing about it at the time. You know, his arguments in the 1970s, that it was going to divide and weaken a unified British working class. Oh, he was bringing all sorts of stuff out to get it. But then there are some trot groups. Who is it? Socialist Equality Party, who are the local affiliate of the International Committee for the Fourth International. I think it's got to be precise with these things. And they're calling for an active abstention. So, yeah.
Exactly. Yeah.
Well, asking people not to vote, but they're not going as far as we are for a write-in vote. So at least it's slightly heartening, but they're flailing around. And I think the other thing is opposition for opposition's sake and causing mayhem. I think that's what it is. A lot of the left see the serried ranks of the high and mighty and go, well, we should do the opposite of what they want.
Just to make a point, I'm sure both the party speakers are well aware, when such a league campaign as I think Theresa Villiers did, they love to go on about democracy, you know, take out. The joke of it is that the Tory party were elected on only 24% of the potential electoral vote, which is only a relatively small minority of the electorate. The whole thing is a joke. It just shows it isn't democratic at all now.
heartily agree.
But that's the only respectable argument that the Leave people can put forward. But it's you know, Britain's more democratic than the EU, but is it? I mean,
yeah.
Well, I mean, in this Wetherspoon News, the only photo is of Tony Benn.
Oh,
and so he's in there, but it says at the bottom, the views expressed in this article are not necessarily those of J.D. Wetherspoon. So, I mean, that's his argument, I suppose. This dates from 1974, was it?
Christian
socialism.
Yes.
This is a good idea that the body has decided not to take side. But the problem is that I wanted to know what is the effect on workers' rights if this happens. If they approve that we join and be the same in the European Union.
Well, Bill did say in it that the workers' rights are the same, you know, they're enshrined in British law as well as in EU law. But, I mean, they're just, not just paper rights, but they're like all rights, they're vague legal ones. I mean, in France at the moment, there's industrial chaos because the government wants to take away some workers' rights to a shorter working week. They want to lengthen the working week and lengthen this sort of thing. And that doesn't protect them from the EU. The only thing which will protect workers' rights will be workers being organised in trade unions, which are capable of imposing these conditions on employers. I know what Bill's union is saying, that if Britain leaves, you can get a Tory government which will take away or try to take away some of these rights, which won't happen if Britain is part of it. But they're fairly basic, these rights, and most unions and people in big industries have got more than the minimum anyway. I mean, there is one right which would disappear, I suppose, which is probably worth having, and that is the right for people to move freely within the EU. It'd be not just people coming here, but for people from here to go and live and work abroad. That's probably something worth having. But even that, to come back to what we said, we don't know what's going to happen in the event of leave. That could still stay, because they can negotiate anything as long as Britain isn't formally a member of the EU.
So your hand there.
First of all, you have to say that even if it's very contradictory or ironic, because I'm obviously an immigrant, I would personally vote Leave. But obviously I wouldn't vote Leave, because the reasons why I would vote Leave, they are completely different from the reasons why they are sustaining that they have to remain or to stay. I think that if I would be voting Leave, I would be giving the power to the wrong people. But I think there are good reasons to Leave. So, this being said, I'd like to know the main reason why, actually, I would vote Leave, and the reason why you've been reading that in the last paper you've been reading, that how globalization is affecting us. And I believe that the clients, I think they are using this to attract the vote of Leave, but they're actually not going to do that. They don't really care about that. It's just propaganda. So, this being said, I would like to know if you guys know, I've been trying to find by them, I will find them. These 2 years' notice in the case of leaving, how this is going to affect immigration? Have they been clear in terms of people have, because some people say that, I hear some people say that all immigrants have to leave, which I'm an immigrant, but it's not even a question, it's a case of the economy of women who follow. Because most of the dirty jobs that we are carrying right now by immigrants, so it's actually good thing for women right now having this. Like a lot of us. Now in my case, we more than like now I have a good position, but I started from scratch with a craft work, like many of the immigrants will come. So, do you know if it's clear, like what they say, like how they're going to regulate? It's going to be for new people who come, it's going to be partially people who are living here.
Well, the point is no one knows. And that's part of the deliberate strategy they followed. It will have to be negotiated. So once they start with Article 50, they will then have to have and only once they've started that. So they could decide to negotiate for 5 years and then go for Article 50, and then another 2 years on top of that. So they could do that. But once they start the negotiations, all it says is that after 2 years, if they haven't got a final status deal, Britain's out anyway, or whoever starts this process leaves. So that's just putting a timetable on that means it's a maximum of 2 years to negotiate the deal. I think it's you're right. They're very unlikely to want to turn around and kick all the EU citizens out. Not least of which, because imagine if they put up a fight and try and stay. You know, there's quite a lot of them. And plus also the 2 million Britons overseas who will be very annoyed about coming back from the lovely Mediterranean villas back to this sunny clime. So it shows that how little room for manoeuvre there really is. They probably won't be able to turn around. They might turn around and say no more coming in. That would certainly be it. I don't know if they could then maybe say put time limits, but that would be something they will have to decide in the future. All we know is that we don't know.
Because when I start hearing like when the movies start coming out, or you know, many, I will have Lee in my mind for different reasons. But then I will have a picture of that movie. So basically, it's a movie in which it's a futuristic movie that represents a dystopia in which UK is the only government all over the world, the only government like with no cuts. All the rest of the world is completely chaos, hunger, wars, everything. And UK is bringing the high, super high fascist government, which doesn't let any immigrants in. It's only English people, and it's, you know, it's funny actually, like how some movies, like the Hunger Games, for example, I don't like the movie itself, but it represents the system. Big power against the revolution, and it's just so funny how they take the piece of past with the industry, the movie industry, because for me, children abroad represents that potential future in England could be maybe 20 years or 30 years. So, you haven't seen the movie, I recommend. Right. You read from a socialist mindset, you read from
But there is a certain irony that you can't vote. But when we were in Chiswick, one of the people handing out Leave leaflets, he had an Antipodean accent. So I said, "Are you an Australian?" He said, "No, I'm a New Zealander." So people come from New Zealand and Canada and other colonies, ex-colonies, they can you know they can vote. But people coming from Europe, so can't. You know,
you can vote.
I can vote. Yeah, yeah. Irish people can vote. Yeah. It's a good insurance if Britain doesn't do to be Irish.
When you're talking about the book buying company here and not investing, stock markets is really tumbling. Price of the pound against the euro is falling. So you know the pound is buying from far less in the European Union in the eurozone than it was before. And as you say, there's a couple of million expats in Europe. Well, and a lot of them are pensioners. And their pensions are not going to give them a standard living that they used to. What's happening now since the 2008 crash? There's an awful lot of pensioners out there who bought bills, and they're in big time negative equity. And so like, all these people can't afford to live in Europe anymore, and they'll be coming home. And they'll be demanding, you know, welfare, they'll be demanding help to get settled again. That's going to cause a problem. And the other thing is that I'm interested in what's likely to happen if there is a vote for exit. What's going to happen to the Tory party? There's a kind of civil war at the moment. I mean, as far as will Cameron resign? Yes. He'll take his place. It's going to be a huge political upheaval, which will be. I mean, as somebody said, you know, you can be condemned to live in interesting times, and I think we're living in those times at the moment.
Well. One way to look at the referendum is it a referendum on which old Etonian is going to be Prime Minister? You know?
Yeah.
I think for the expats, there's another issue, which someone pointed out to me, which is not just that they could get kicked out or they might have to come back, but that they could just be taxed to the hilt. Because once they're freed from the protection of being European citizens, if they want to stay, then they're a cash cow. So they just get taxed just enough so they don't leave. But, you know, so there's all these issues. On what happened to the Tory party, I think if there's a vote to leave, they're more likely to reconcile than with a Remain vote. Because it's quite clear that what's happening, I think, for a lot of these parties, I think if Cameron stayed away from number 10 and was just, you know, a backbench MP, he'd be for out. I think that's the same for a great many of them. I think it's once that they're locked into these structures of power and they understand that there's nowhere else to go except to stay in, that they do. But if there was an out vote went through, they could all just go, okay, yeah, fine, we're all patriots, and line up with whatever new regime. I think the big danger is, what on earth do all these people who spent years fighting for a referendum, fighting to leave, making it their big cause, so they're, where do they go? They've made their careers out of this. And once it's settled, once we have, you know, this is it, final status for the next 40 years, short of a right-wing revolution, you know, and a UKIP victory of doom, they're stuffed. And, you know, so maybe their only option is to join UKIP. Who knows? But I think that actually, for the Tory party, leaving is the least worst option as a party, but as a government, it would destroy them.
Actually, technically, retired people haven't got the right to live anywhere in Europe. It's only free movement of labour. So it's a concession that governments have made. If you retire, you haven't got the right to go and live in another country. They could stop you, and the European Court of Justice would let it happen.
I think they do have the right to. But you have to be self-sustaining, so you don't have the right to benefits or welfare.
Yeah, something like that.
So if you're a pensioner with a pension, you can go live anywhere because the money is flowing in.
Those countries who have similar GDPs, for example, Britain has similar to the GDP of the European Union. The average of the GDP, real GDP, a pension of the European Union is 38,000, that of Britain is 41,000. Therefore, it is more economic that more capital and labor can move about, intensifies the growth. But if the GDP per person were very different, it would not be economic.
You're saying that the free market makes sense where there's comparable GDPs across per heads across the various different countries. Some countries within the European Union have much lower GDP per capita. Greece, Romania, Bulgaria, which is probably why there's been such a draw factor for their workers to come and work here. But although there is a higher cost of living here as well. These are the issues on why the Leave campaign are getting so much traction out of the distinction between the wealthy core and the wider EU.
Hmm. But the capitalist country like Britain has got an aging population, and they need young workers. If they don't get them from Eastern Europe, they've got to get them from somewhere. Just to keep the system, if capitalism is going to keep accumulating. So, I mean, the government has made a promise to try and get the net migration down. It's failed, and it will keep on failing. I mean, let's say Ian Duncan Smith promises that if immigration will be restricted, or the wages of some workers won't go up by much, incidentally. All the statistics show that it's about 1.5% or something. That it might have gone down for certain, you know, very low paid workers. That's not going to happen. So I think migration will continue anyway from somewhere, because a country like Britain with an aging population will need younger people to come. They can come from these. I mean, most of these people coming from Poland, the mainland, because it's the biggest. They're not old people. You can see them. They're young people, aren't they?
Well, Japan's got the same problem, and they are trying to restrict migration. So they're having to look at creating robots to look after old people. They're seriously having to invest in that direction.
Have a robot, then it has to have a human being.
Well, there aren't any human beings to be had.
There are 7 billion on the planet, but
well, they're not letting them in.
Sorry.
Yeah, I mean, one thing that hasn't been brought up is the part of propaganda. I mean, you had Farage there. I mean, making
maybe Nazi propaganda, you know, with a great queue of immigrants. So I think probably people will infer from the outlet that a lot of these are going to be refugees coming from, you know, places of in the Middle East. And this is what they're, you know, this is one part of the propaganda that they're using, which is kind of despicable in a way, anti-repressive. We've got a country that we've got governments that we voted for that have gone into these places like Afghanistan, Iraq, and Syria, and created absolute sort of carnage and chaos. And we're not prepared to deal with consequences. We've got a population that's prey, or certainly part of the population that's prey to this kind of propaganda.
You can let Farage off the hook to a certain extent because he's against military intervention in these countries. Or he said he was.
So I think on the propaganda front, there's something else interesting, which is if you look at Labour figures who've been joining in the Remain campaign with Cameron, it's quite interesting to see how many of them are former Blairites. I mean, we had David Miliband introducing David Cameron for a big speech at the British Museum. We've had Peter Mandelson. And Alan Johnson's probably not Blairite as such, but there's an awful lot of them. The ones who are actually sharing the platform with the Tories, and that, I think this is part back to what I was saying about the network angle, is that these people were part of this international sort of like group of people who are moving between countries and dealing with people, government officials, and then moving out from being elected officials into institutions, like Miliband moving into international rescue. That's the way they live. And for them, it's as natural as breathing to be part of this sort of international organisation. And it's a bit strange watching Jeremy Corbyn trying to make headway without sharing a platform and being sort of like a separate Labour, you know, Remain for these reasons, but not for these. And of course, you know, again, he would probably, if he was still a backbencher, be for Leave. I mean, there's no one believes for a second that he's actually changed his mind, but he knows. I think it's of a level. It's not a point of principle. You know, he could tack on this one and say, okay, well, the majority of the Labour Party are for staying. He wants to stay in the charge. He's going to have to tack on this. But I think the fact that the fact that they're having to come out so heavy on immigration is because they've got nothing else left. Once Obama shut them down over the idea of a trade deal with the US. Once they've lost on the economy, once they've lost everywhere else, they've only had immigration. And that's got traction because the Tories have been having that about it for years. And because obviously for a lot of people who international affairs means nothing except that Polish fella down the street who's nicked me job. And that's working. That's got them somewhere. And they're hammering on. That's why at the start the Remain campaign were going, it's about the patriotic duty of defence, security. It's the patriotic choice. They were desperately wrapping themselves in the flag because they knew they were weak on this angle. They had to make a fairly boring technical document into a matter of gross national importance.
There is one other thing where the Leave campaign are right. Everybody's forgotten Cameron was supposed to have negotiated some reforms, but in fact he didn't negotiate anything. He just froze the present situation with that Britain's not going to join the Eurozone. So they produced this leaflet, but they quote Cameron and they say, "So just what did Cameron come back with in 2016? Turn over to see." But I mean, nobody. It's all been forgotten now what Cameron is supposed to have got back. I mean, Obama and people like that, that's a small detail.
Once the vote will determine a commercial effect between Britain and mainland Europe,
yeah.
No mention has been made with regard to military developments that are taking place which are mutual between, say, the French companies or the British companies. I've read recently of investment in new aircraft carriers or something like that, which obviously there's no mention being made in the publicity.
I'm just looking for a leaflet that I got yesterday from Veterans for for Britain, but not for the women. But they were saying, we must defend the British army. We don't want the British army to be integrated into a European army. But they were saying that they were making the point that you were making, that we have bilateral things with France, because Britain and France are the two ex-imperial powers which have got armies which can fight. You know, the other armies have been described as hairnet armies, haven't they? The Danish army and so on, all this sort of thing. They're no good. So the only, as far as maintaining, you know, being the world's policeman, so the British and the French armies are the ones, and we don't want to become part of a European army. I don't think there is a plan anyway to have a European army, but it's been mentioned.
And of course, in our little EU, still part of NATO. And of course, the Leaves say this is a good thing, we're still part of NATO. For those on the left, it's, well, you're still part of NATO. You know, you're not really leaving these vast international organisations that can overrule and tell a country what to do. There are a considerable, well, they say they're great for our security, but they're also great for a great risk, because they keep building up troop movements in the Baltic states to manoeuvres to warn off Vladimir Putin and all this sort of thing. So,
well, I found the leaflet now. It's Britain will be safer outside of the EU. Here's why. Major General Julian Thompson, commander of land forces, Falkland conflict, and he says, you know, NATO is better than the EU. But there's a thing here from some MP. Penny Mordaunt, I suppose she's a Tory MP, is she? She says, we have a legitimate need to protect and enhance our global interests. It is important that we maintain independent defence capability to do so. We stand the best chance of doing this outside the EU. So, I mean, they still want to put... Well, it's the League of Empire loyalists, isn't it? It's not UKIP. And I've got all these other people speaking here. Former head of MI6, former deputy commander NATO forces, Rear Admiral Roger Lone Knot, and people like that are saying it. So. Veterans of UK Armed Force urge you to vote leave. It's the only way to regain democratic control. So. They were out there, incidentally, in their thing with the hat and all their medals.
Tell us something about the European Parliament, which only came into being. There was an assembly, then became a parliament with more sort of power. But what I'm interested in is the political blocks that are in the parliament. They seem to be allocated like Christian Democrats. They're the largest. Then you've got the socialist, right, question mark, block going down to Green. So do they vote on the actual policies? I mean, they're supposed to meet 2 months out of the year. At a parliament in Strasbourg. So what is it they actually vote on? Is it the regulations that come up, new laws? It seems a hell of a lot of, you know, what you call it, labour that's involved, you know, bureaucrats, administrators and the rest of it. And the length of time it takes to read something and to come out and have a ruling or a regulation. So is there an allegiance amongst the blocs and the way that they vote, or did some of them vote nationally?
But the European Parliament isn't a parliament in the sense that we understand parliament. It doesn't make laws. No. It's consulted on them. I mean, the lawmaking body of the European Union is the Council of Ministers, which is, you know, one minister for each member state, and they make the decisions.
But
the European Parliament has got some powers to, I think they can block some decisions and so on.
Yeah.
But it isn't really, it's called a parliament.
Yeah.
But I mean, you have to have, I think to form a parliamentary group, you've got to have a minimum of, I don't know, say 14 things, and must come from three different countries. So you get Britain, the Tory party in Britain, it was with the Christian Democrats, I think, and then they withdrew, and it was some peculiar group of right-wing people from Hungary and Poland and things like that at the moment. But they get all sorts of money to print things. I mean, there were some Trotskyist people in, and they're linked with others, and they can publish things of what they, you know, what they do. And UKIP does it, of course.
Yeah,
UKIP,
right,
UKIP uses the money for money, but actually that will be interesting, because if there's a leave vote, the parliament will still be there. Presumably UKIP will withdraw its MEPs, but I mean, European Parliament is a good idea, I suppose. People from all over Europe should vote. on the same day to elect people, even if they are just basically discussing things.
Yeah.
I mean, the decision making process in the EU is quite complicated. The Commission proposes, and then the Council of Ministers decides, and the Parliament has got some sort of say in the process.
I think the Parliament can reject a commission.
Oh yes, it can do that.
So,
yes.
I think they can reject the budget.
Yes.
Or at least send it back, and then they can comment on this things coming forward. So it's not democratic. In some ways, it's quite democratic because if you start off from people indirectly, each country indirectly votes for its ministers. Yeah. So those ministers are democratically accountable. It's just that they meet in secret, which is the big issue. So in the Parliament itself, Christian Democrats, and it's the Socialists and Democrats, they call themselves, bloc. They're the two largest, and they tend to work as a grand coalition, so that keeps it all on track between the two of them. And then you have the nationalist fringes around the place, and it's kind of like the red, the conservatives and the Democrats kind of just swap the top jobs between themselves because they've basically got a permanent massive majority between them, no matter which is the larger. But the principle, I suppose, is it's no less democratic than any nation state, and the idea of replacement would be government ministers negotiating treaties practically in secret, and it just all being down to the cabinet level. So, which I think is what some of them want. I mean, some of them, when they say that Europe isn't democratic, what they're complaining about is, in fact, it's too democratic for their liking.
Yeah.
Are we all talked out, do people think?
Do you want to break up? Talk about it later.
No,
I wanted to know about the, say, environmental regulations. George Monbiot, in some article about groups of farmers petitioning the government because their regulations on the farm slurry waste and some businesses. So another place, they want to cut their costs. The idea is in Europe they try to harmonise, these so there's a standard of environmental standards across all the member states. But in a society where they cut costs, capitalism, deal with trade across the world. Does that mean that they may actually dilute, water down some of the regulations that pertain now? But do you think that was something that they would actually do?
But
would be,
I mean, the EU is a trading bloc. It's a customs union. It's still got tariffs for stuff coming from overseas. Especially on agricultural products, and for instance, they don't allow GM crops in Europe. One of the reasons is they don't want animal feed and so on from America and Brazil coming in. So some of these environmental things are non-tariff barriers to world free trade.
There's certain chemical in the TP that are banned from Europe.
Yeah.
That means if they go ahead with it, that these chemicals that are erstwhile banned will be no restrictions, no barriers to it.
But this is this one here. Love it, hate TTIP.
Yeah.
Is by the campaign for an independent Britain, and the sort of arguments they're using against TTIP. The sort of things that left-wing people have been using. We don't want corporations to be able to sue national governments and things like that. But I don't think. I mean, nobody wants this thing anyway. The American Congress doesn't want it. All the candidates for the American presidency are all are in favour of protectionism and so on. So it's not going to happen anyway. And even if Britain did leave, the sort of people in favour of it would be the Tories would take over, so they would sign it themselves.
I think certainly UK farmers, largely, there's a lot of them want to remain because they know that the subsidy they get from Europe won't be given to them if you leave. I think one of the reasons, there's two good reasons why farms get subsidised. One is landowners tend to be wealthy and want more money for themselves. But the other thing is to try and avoid, to have food security and avoid economic shocks which are going to the labour market. Yes. If food suddenly becomes very expensive, wages have to go up to compensate, and you know they need to regulate out and level out the cost of food to protect that. So they would need to very seriously look at Britain's food supplies and the amount of subsidy that would be required. Even the Canadian deal doesn't include all agricultural products. There's a lot of them are still exempt from the so-called free trade deal between Europe and Canada. So it's a very complicated part of it, but it's very much bound up with national interest and property interest. And no one from the Leave campaign have been very quiet about it, because obviously, realistically, normally, anti-European people hate the CAP. But of course, hitting the CAP, the agricultural policy, would mean alienating all the farmers who benefit from it. And of course, the present moment, they want their votes, so they're keeping very quiet, presumably saying they would still give money to farmers for doing nothing.
So in fact, you know, this $350 million they're talking about is going to be spent on the health service. A lot of it have to be spent on subsidising farmers.
And so. Universities, they've said they're not going to take any money off universities. So that's it. It's another tranche that's not going anywhere.
It's not going to happen. Anyway, I think we have more or less exhausted the discussion. And we're not having any more meetings here, I don't think, until after the summer, because it gets a bit hot in here, doesn't it? But there is socialist activity taking place. The next one is the Socialist Party Summer School on the 22nd to the 24th of July in Birmingham. Dave, is there still places, is there?
Sorry?
There's still places in this, is there?
Yeah, there are a few places.
Yeah. So it's on money talks.
Money in single figures now.
Banks and so on. So it's still there.
Well, there's an American comedian that says that money roars. It doesn't speak. It screams or
something. Yeah. Are you sort of winding up? Or?
Yeah, we can wind up. The collection is £34.90. We've actually got another meeting on
Tuesday
in West London branch on the Common Market.
That's with Pete, isn't it?
No, it's not. Well, he's had a craft because he said he works in a place with lots of East Europeans. They've all gone away. So the few British people there are having to work overtime, so he can't do it. But there will be a meeting. It'll be him or me or me. Chris Scully. He works somewhere in Norwich in a bookstore or something, or a book warehouse. But most of the other people working there are Polish workers. You know.
So they left the job for some reason.
Well, I think they just got home for the summer holiday. I mean,
right, so to very quickly wind up, thank you all very much for coming in for a stimulating debate. And hopefully, it's remarkable, we only had the briefest of talks about what we were each going to say. The talks actually seemed to gel together reasonably well. So hopefully you've been suitably informed. I suspect that this recording won't make it onto the interweb until after the vote. So for those of you listening in the future, the tin cans, you can open them up with a rock and stay away from the fires. They're dangerous. Remember what civilization was like when it was still around. But I think joking aside, on the 24th, the sun will still be in the sky. There'll still be a bunch of islands just off to the northwest of Europe, and we will still all have to work for the people who own them. And that's what it's all about. Thank you very much. Yeah.